Okay. So, thank you for attending today. There are several of us on this meeting here, just for the sake of the recording. Okay. And I was wondering whether the first item on the agenda would be to finalize the meeting notes that Ken put out at the end of the last meeting. Is there any changes, anybody, or we will consider that final?
It might not be out of the GNSO Policy Council.
Okay, going, one, two, three. Okay, finalized, Ken. Okay. All right. Now, next issue is there any other business besides what I had on the agenda? Anybody else wants to discuss anything at the end of this call? Anybody else has any issues? Allocate for the call? Okay, all right. So we can go forward. I guess, according to the agenda that I put out and what is expected of us in this meeting is to go through each of the four sections. I guess I started calling them, you know, four point something and so on and so forth, and I guess Tim has also done the same nomenclature. So, I guess, I haven't checked myself, I'm trying about to check right now. Has Tim's one been posted on the wiki, Ken?
Yes.
Okay, so we have two of them posted right now.
Everything.
Oh, everybody's
posted
in that, because I've not actually gone on it yet. Okay,
yeah,
I'm about to get on it. Okay.
The wiki's completely up to date, as best I know.
Okay. So can we start with the first section report then, whoever's responsible for the first one on that list?
This is Ken, if I might jump in. Subhaya, thanks to your suggestion. I followed your model and used the sort of the numbering system. If we go to the wiki and start looking where it says tentative structure for operating model, you'll also note that I've added a whole new section, 1.0 general, which was not in the outline before. It's brand new. And I'll take responsibility for it, or staff
okay.
will. But I just wanted to start. Maybe I could start with that one, and then
why don't we just start with that?
When you numbered it four, your section four, there were only. I thought, well, you know, he makes a good point. There probably should be a section one, and that should be like a general section. So I went ahead and created it.
Okay.
My first thought on it would be that maybe we'd start off with 1.1 background, citing various references, you know, from the BGC report and the board, you know, all the background material that led to the creation of the OSE and this working group team in particular. Then maybe section 1.2 would be the purpose of this operating model document. And I'm going to read this one just as a draft, and I recognize it's maybe a little clumsy, but the concept we've had on the purpose of this would be to assist working groups optimize productivity and effectiveness by providing a set of guidelines, checklists, templates, and other best practice materials that they can consider and or utilize as appropriate in the process of formation and throughout the working group's evolution. It's clunky a little bit in places, but I just wanted to get that idea across that what we're trying to do here is to create a nice broad set of capabilities, tools, ideas, templates, checklists, and things that working groups could immediately take advantage of and hopefully make them more productive faster in the process than they might otherwise have been. And my reason for wanting to highlight that a little bit is that there has been continued confusion both on the other sub-team and this one as to, like, what are these documents? Are we writing guidelines for a particular working group or for all working groups in general? And so I just wanted to lay that out. I'd like to pause there and just see if there's any comments about that.
Okay. Let me just say that I myself ran into this with Tom, who's not here yet, Tom Rizla, and I took it upon in my section to think that what we were doing was basically coming up with the kind of questions. Things, I mean, even down to, you know, what software to use, what format to use, and stuff like that, that a coming-in chair or a coming-in committee, as it's being convened, would look at and say, look, I want to use this. People have thought through for me already. What are the things that I might probably need, you know? And I'll look through that and decide, this is what I want to use. This is not what I want to use. Good thing somebody mentioned this. I'll keep that in mind. I have something else I want to do besides what's on this list. But that's just basically a cheat sheet list of things to do, as opposed to sort of a short document, which is just formal procedures, you know, of what is expected in general of you, as opposed to, on top of that, a list of things you might want to consider, really, you know, mundane things. So, you know, one, what I had in mind would perhaps be better called guidelines, in a way, guidebook, as opposed to just formal procedure. I assumed that was what was required, so I went a bit detailed regarding that. Not meaning that each of these things are things that the chair has to do or has to be restricted to. It's just a list for them to take a look at to decide whether there's, you know, a thought-out list from beforehand. Now, you know, on the other side of the story is just a shorter sort of a formal procedure document thing. Now, you know, so I don't know, has anybody got input into that? I mean, which way we should go, or... Anyone?
Silence.
All right, I guess, what do you say, Kenya? So we'll leave it the way you have it right now, which is simply one way. It's kind of both, actually, right? That's what you're suggesting. It's kind of, it will include both the formal procedure sort of part of, you know, just the major directives of how you're supposed to think about these things. And
no,
then,
I would say it does not contain formal procedures.
Okay, not at all.
That's not the intent.
Basically... Okay, nitty-gritty operational things you might want to think about.
Yeah, these are, and I like, I mean, maybe a good suggestion might be to call it operating model guidebook. That might actually, that's a nice little term. So maybe you want to, we'll capture that in the, as a possible suggestion. Because it seems like the way to go with this kind of a thing.
Okay.
It's impossible to know any particular working group's needs. All we can do is make general suggestions that they ought to consider. Okay, let me just continue. So the third section maybe of this general area would be structure, meaning you know, table of contents. What is actually included in this operating model? And then I also thought, based on some comment somebody else made, that it might be nice to have some capability for this document to live and be dynamic as working groups meet and as they consider what's in the operating model guidebook or whatever we call it. That there's a process and or a set of procedures that they would use if they want to make enhancements or corrections, additions, and so forth and so on to it. And over time, it could become quite a really useful model if it has that kind of continual enhancements to it. So that's the general section, unless anybody can think of anything to add or subtract or change.
Anyone? Okay, I actually like that last idea personally because I was just involved in my kindergarten level, grade level science project with my kids, and they have these volcano blow up experiments every year, and they get different parents to do it, and it really helps because when I look through every parent in previous years who ever done it, adds to that document, they say, you know, don't use half a teaspoon, use a full teaspoon, the main instruction is wrong, that kind of stuff, tricks, things that, just little things that are... So maybe it's a good idea, I guess, as part of this to say at the end of a working group model, the chair or members of the committee are interested are formally required in some sense to fill out a page saying what would they update to this. If they wanted to, they could leave it blank after their view of the process. That seems like a nice idea to me. Okay. And anyway, okay, so I guess section one we're kind of done with, at least in our... group here. Just before we go to section two, I just want to say that perhaps the way forward, unless people have something else in mind, is that we go through all this now, and if there are any thoughts that we have and we want to change some of this, we do it now. If not, people can go back. I know this was only put up in the last 24 hours. Can go back in the next few days and suggest any changes before our full meeting with everybody else, right? And so this won't be the last time to speak up and say you want to make changes, at least within our group. We'll fill up occasion on the email list, and, you know, if there's some things, maybe you can adjust it. And then when we have our full meeting, I guess we'll all fully together, both sub-teams will still review all of this, and maybe at that point as well there might be some input from the other side and perhaps from our own side. I mean, I that's what I'm thinking in terms of time. Session report two, roles and responsibilities. Anyone? Hello? Anyone wants to lead the person who was support the team that was responsible for the roles and responsibilities? Would someone just walk us through the main key points? Hello?
Is anybody on the call? I'm wondering if we've lost everybody.
Yeah. No, I'm here.
I am here.
Alexei Sazonov, was
yes,
that
I'm here.
Second?
I'm here. Just it's a weird sound.
Okay, great.
Okay. Ken, did you have the list of who was assigned to what?
Alexei Sazonov submitted the roles and responsibilities, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, Alexei, would you like to just work through, just talk through some of the main points, 2.1, 2, 3, and 4?
Oh, yeah. So actually, this is definitely not all possible issue that might be covered here, but what I have found and walked through so far is here. And the key issue here, it looks like it is the accountability. So actually, everything is in here, so it's better to read that just the written English much better than my spoken English.
Okay. I guess maybe then...
Why don't I go ahead and walk us through it real quick?
Yeah, walk us through that, or you know, we'll just read along. I'm reading along now. Yeah,
because I wanted to make a point on the very first item under roles and responsibilities.
Okay.
On that was on section 2.1, which is called checklist for the working group chair. As I made in my note there, after looking at this element afresh, I'm beginning to wonder if a checklist really belongs under roles and responsibilities. You know, it strikes me that maybe we could move a checklist or a template or something like that to an appendix level, and it could contain a whole lot of different things that were picked up from all these sections and dropped into sort of, I'm thinking of the checklist wouldn't just be about roles and responsibilities, but it might also consider things like logistics and session. You know, have you done this? Maybe it's a series of questions. Have you done this? Have you looked into this? Have you checked that? And maybe they'd be organized in topic outline. Does anybody have any thoughts about that?
That's a good idea.
Yeah, personally, I think it's a good idea, too.
All right, so maybe what we can do here is maybe section 2.1 should be retitled roles or responsibilities. And actually, we have 2.3. Well, okay, we can come back to this. Well, what was submitted here was to use roles and responsibilities matrix, assign individuals to categories and so forth and so on. Then the goal of the roles and responsibilities to define them. I'm wondering if some of that material that was under 2.1 maybe belongs better under 2.3.
Well, they're very much interconnected.
Yeah,
so.
They really are. Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. So what I'll do is I'll pick up 2.1, renumber that set of sections, and create a new one at the bottom under 5.0. We'll call it 6.0 maybe, and call it appendices or something, and put the checklist down under there. How's that sound?
Good.
All right, so then the next section then is formation, assembly, and introductions. And looks like under formation options, goals, public versus private interest, stakeholders, declarations of interest. And then for assembly options, Alexei really asked, I changed what you had done there, but I think what you were really asking is this an overlap with section 4.1? Same thing with the introduction. I guess we probably need to spend a few minutes of time thinking a little bit more about what we mean by formation, assembly, and introductions.
Yeah.
I can tell you what I had in mind at the time. It was, it may seem kind of silly, but or self-obvious that when a working group starts and meets, that there would be a point at which everybody sort of introduces themselves, tells them, people, you know, a little bit about themselves, that kind of thing. I don't know whether that's the kind of stuff we want to suggest here. So this whole topic around roles and responsibilities was, in this formation section, had more to do with just the act of bringing a group of people together and making them a group. How do you form yourselves? you know, and assemble and then introduce everybody and create kind of a team out of it.
Yeah.
That was what was in, that was what I had in mind originally with that.
Well, that's a different story then, right?
Yeah. But if that were the case, Ken, then the, as it stands, the section formation option to the sentence there, all the way to accountability level statement, together with the statement that exists for introduction options, it kind of satisfies that goal that you just said, Ken, just as it stands, those two things.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? With nothing else added to it, it pretty much covers a lot of it, I would say, given that that's what you wanted. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm open to other suggestions that we either, A, don't need this section, or maybe we title it something else.
Well, I think it would be necessary. In some level, it would be a section that would be needed, right? I mean, you know, in terms of what is it that you have to do to form yourself in terms of options? What are the minimal things that you have to consider, right?
Yeah, okay. All right, good. Well,
I mean,
then
these are just nitty-gritty things. I mean, like, you know, make sure you do the declaration of interest, make sure you take care of disclosures, you know, find out what people's skills are, right? I mean, this is not, you know, I mean, these are just checklist sort of items that you have to do to get yourself started, right? I mean, this is not kind of like overlapping with the charter group in some sense. It's not quite the same thing. The charter basically sets itself up as to the general bigger idea, right? And this would be the actual nitty-gritty of the things you need to take care of before you actually form.
That's right. Yeah. These are things that the charter would largely be silent about.
Correct.
Okay. The next section was 2.3, specific group responsibilities. And the suggestion was to define a project team. There's a coding system here. A for accountable, for successful completion, R responsible, S support tasks, and C require communication about the task. Anybody have any thoughts about that classification system?
Anyone?
There's also a suggestion of assessing the skills of the project team members as to their knowledge about the topic from 0 to 2.
The only question I have regarding that, I really doesn't matter to me in some level, but there may be two options, because the question is who decides whether you have any skill level, right? Is it going to be the group or the chair as a whole, or is it just self-identification of skill set? I mean, or maybe we should just, you know, leave that as options, either one, but as options for the chair to think of.
Excuse me, in my understanding, because I was working through this, so the accountability is the key here. If we cannot identify the accountability, so it's really difficult to get job done.
Yeah, what I had sort of in mind for this section originally was in working groups, you know, there's going to be a role for a chair. There might be a role for a vice chair. Maybe somebody has to have secretariat duties for minutes, or maybe that's an assigned. Then there's a staff role. There's potentially a logistics or meeting role. I was thinking more about kinds of suggesting to the working group that they consider a number of different roles that could be filled by different people for different purposes, depending on the size of the group, and what are those roles, and what are those assignments. These ideas here are interesting because I hadn't thought about them, but they go a step further and say, once you describe the roles and their duties and their assignments, you know, maybe there's some assessment process that says, you know, if you're strong or weak, or that maybe you need additional training or a help or assistance or something along those lines.
I think my own thing is perhaps to leave it flexible to the chair in the future or whatever, is to simply say one possible way of addressing that would be just to ask, you know, put all the tasks out there and ask the group, you know, which one they feel comfortable as experts, which of these different skill sets they would like to be matched to, which is what normally people do anyway, and then let the chair make a decision based on that input and their own assessment. I mean, that could be one operational guideline model of how people may want to do this.
Yeah, this is Tim. Another thought, too, is that I think, you know, what will be needed as far as, you know, experts or specific yeah. skills may not be, it may be something that's sort of decided as the work progresses, maybe, you know, as the statement of work's reviewed and the work plan's created, whatever. And then if it is decided that certain expertise or skills are needed, then perhaps that could be followed up with a separate, you know, statement or additional information from any of the members who might be able to supply that expertise or skill.
Yeah, we're actually going to come to that in section four.
I think Ken is distinguishing here between, and I like to say, this is just kind of a, in expertise, we're talking about who can operate the phone system as opposed to something substantial expertise. I think that's what he's just, I think basically he's saying matching people to their basic skills to get the committee going and get done, as opposed to some high-level expertise of subject matter, which will be covered in the other section, I think. Is that fair enough, Ken? I mean,
yeah, I think so. What I'm going to do is I'll go into the wiki after the call and throw a couple of ideas in for you know, specific roles, duties, and assignments that any working group team might consider assigning somebody to do. You know, and then I'll keep this material in there as well. Is that okay for now?
Yes. Anyone? And, you know, please feel free to chip in any time. There are just six of us. We won't be interrupting each other too much. Just don't wait for me. You know, just chip in whenever you want.
Okay, so then continuing in the section 2.4, use of subteams, the idea here was simply to, again, suggest to the working group that it consider whether it needs to work as a big group or, as we have discovered in our own team, breaking up into mini teams in order to get specific things done. You know, it's probably something that most teams would think of on their own, but we were trying to be exhaustive in the list. And then 2.5, implementing self-selection processes. I guess we can take a minute and just read what's here. Yeah. This question of self-selection, that terminology existed over on the other sub-teams outline as well, and there's apparently been some confusion about what it is and where it came from. I think it was in the BGC report itself, they talked about, in going to a working group model, that individuals should be able to, quote, self-select themselves into a working group, as opposed to the task force model, which is every constituency assigns somebody, that sort of a model. So anybody, if a working group is, if a charter is developed, and if somebody reads the mission of that charter and says, oh, I'm really interested in that, they can just self-select themselves and say, I would like to participate in that working group. And so the question in my mind was, do we need any guidelines both at the charter level and do we need guidelines at the operating level that helps to understand how to work that in since it's a new concept? And I don't know whether anything additional needs to be done there or not. I see that Liz has joined us. Welcome, Liz.
Thank you. Hello, sorry Liz. To be late.
Liz, you can chip in any time we want.
We've been walking through the wiki, which is now updated with all the input, and we're on section 2.5.
Thank you.
2.5. And the view we are taking here is that we're going to walk through all these section reports, and then as time permits, and then if we have points to make right now, we will say right now, and Ken will kind of address it and put it in later, or you can edit it too. But there's also an opportunity in the next few days before the full team meeting, you know, if you have subsequent reflection, you want to change things, we can still work on this as a working document, get your feedback into these things. And then even in the full team meeting, I think we'll all be talking about all of this, and there'll be an opportunity to modify not only what the other sub team has been doing, but also our own one, I suspect. So there's still time to get your feedback in. So regarding 2.5, my thought is I'm okay with it, except that I'm a little puzzled by reflect on their performance, the first one. This is for someone who's going to be applying in a way to join a committee that is about to be formed based on their personal credentials, I guess. What does that mean in that context that they reflect on their performance? They haven't done anything for the committee yet, unless the performance is being talked about as something else. I just want clarification. I'm not bothered by what it is, but... Does that make sense, my question? I mean...
Yes, it does. This is Ken. Okay. It makes sense to me. I'm not sure what it means either.
Right. So, you know, Alexei, did you have anything when you're thinking about it in mind, particularly about at that stage to talk about their performance, reflect on their performance?
Just a second.
I mean, it makes sense if you're saying about your own performance, kind of in the background area of this area.
Well, this is that meant that it's just as a part of your introduction. So maybe
I see. Okay,
yeah.
Fine. It's just a language issue. Okay,
correct.
Okay, so it's just an issue of, you know, basically your past performance in life, pretty much, or something like that.
Yeah.
Experience might be a better term, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, could use a better term, but yeah.
Okay.
Kyle, I'm here. I took it to mean performance in previous working groups. I mean, your ability to prove that you were an active participant or you added to the productivity of the working group.
Yeah, this is Ken. So, you know, it's. I'm wondering if the section that handles statements of interest is a better place for this kind of thing to be dealt with. And that will probably. I wonder if that'll be in the charter document itself. If it is, it probably will only state something like the working group members must complete statements of interest, and the statements of interest will have these categories, these topics, these questions. I suspect that the charter document will specify what is minimally required in any statement of interest. The operating model doesn't probably have to go into much detail. So I guess we can this one we could probably table until we see what the charter document looks like it's going to contain, and then really the operating model just has to deal with, okay, people have submitted their statements of interest, right? If you're in a working group team, the question is, where are they? Where do you find them? Should everybody read each other's statements of interest? Is that a norm, or is that something that each working group ought to do in the beginning? So that they can understand where people come from and what the other teams they've worked on and what experience they bring. It's all part of the understanding the skill set of each other, I suppose.
My thought on that would be, you know, in terms of practicality, is that basically, I mean, at some level you have to, trust the chair, right? And basically the chair makes some decisions based on initial applications, and then 2.6 will be the critical part that we will need to have a objection mechanism if people feel that they were not selected, whatever, and then we need to have a mechanism developed for that. I mean, somebody has to develop it, not us, but I mean, the working group, I guess, right? Any thoughts?
Yeah, it just seems maybe like 2.5 and 2.6 belong together, and maybe I'll take a shot at proposing something there. Now, when you talk about an objection mechanism, meaning that if somebody self-selected them into a working group, that there would be a process for ejecting them from the team?
I took it, Alexei, I don't know what you took it to mean.
It is kind of both, right? Because it's just the both side that is reasonable.
I see. Both for ejecting, and if you're upset that you didn't get in, you'd like to be able to...
this point.
Well, I mean,
that will be
like
an interesting one to talk about, to draft.
Correct. I know. That
yeah,
we get
talking,
to the draft,
we're talking now about some kind of working group process.
Right.
Is it consensus based, voting based? So to put this into stark terms, somebody on this team wants Ken Bauer off the team.
Right.
And we would write into the operating model some procedure where, you know, maybe it starts with any one of the team members objecting to the participation
right.
of Ken Bauer on this team.
Right.
And then the chair would be, you know, is this the kind of thing we're talking about writing in here?
Well, I think no.
Isn't some of that covered in the working group principles or whatever that we put together for the PPFC to work under? There was an objection mechanism. I thought that looked fairly decent. It might have been more in the purpose of it might have been more for you know, objecting to a chair's call of consensus. Or
right.
But I think it could be applied similarly. I mean, that, you know, within the working group, it could be a much simpler process where you just appeal to the chair. Chair can make a decision based on, you know, the consensus of the group. But if that still doesn't satisfy the person objecting, they would have that other process that they could follow that goes up at the council level.
Good. So I was thinking that what we needed for the purposes of this document at this stage is just two bullet points under whether we merge 2.5 or 2.6 together, two bullet points. One of the bullet points would be simply to say, hey, the two forms of objection. One is this, if a person didn't get in and they want to say, look, I would like to appeal. And the other one is if the group didn't want somebody or somebody didn't want somebody else, then. So all we need to do is put the two chapter titles on it right now. Is that correct, Ken? I mean, we don't have to actually delve into how to actually implement it in some way later on. We'll have to do that later when we draft it up, perhaps along what Tim is suggesting, which seems reasonable to me. But is that correct, Ken? So we just need to identify the two subchapter headings right now. And
yeah, yes, I think I can. I think I can take care of that. this is good discussion because we definitely have to think about whether it's in the charter or it's in the operating model. There has to be a place somewhere for handling of an individual who's being obstructionist.
Correct.
And your question, the second part of that, which is, what do I do if I didn't get accepted, never even occurred to me. It didn't occur to me that a person could be denied the opportunity to participate in a working group a priori, meaning before I even did anything wrong. Maybe you could be denied just because the team is too big and they can't take
it. Yeah,
I
understand.
I don't know. Those are good questions. I'll get that topped in there.
I can see that many of these things that we've discussed so far, operational things, and people said our group in itself would be pretty flexible about drafting something that's compromised and so on. But I think certain key issues will turn up in this whole document and in everything that we're doing as a team where it'll be critical, where there'll be more debate. And I think one of the ones we saw was the one where the voting thresholds and the consensus, what does consensus mean? I suspect this issue would also be something like that, where we would have to spend more time later on drafting some proper procedure, how to take care of the in or out of a group. And I think we should just, in the interest of time, just flag that as sort of two chapter headings, unless anybody else has any chapter, sub-chapter headings there, you know, and move on to the next section, or at least the questions regarding everything in section two right now. Is that fair?
Yes, sounds good to me.
Anyone else? Any views on all of section two? Okay. Then we're going to norms. I think it's Nacho. You met?
I'm not sure. Caroline and Constantino.
Oh, sorry, Caroline.
Right.
Can you walk us through?
Yep, no problem. So if I take it section by section, fairly self-explanatory. The first one, interpretation and meaning of good standing. We thought to include there some sort of wording around participants committing to being active participants on the working group once they've signed up, and that they should be obliged to contribute in a way that is respectful to the other working group members and doesn't cause offence in any way. We thought that we should leave it to the discretion of the chair to set minimum attendance participation levels. We kind of left it discretionary because I think it very much depends on the scope of the work of the working group and deadlines to be met, etc. And in any case, participation data should be included at the end of a working group report. And as an example, I referenced the Reserve Names Working Group report, which lists quite comprehensive participation data at the end. I happen to think I was on that working group, and I know a couple of other people in this group were as well, and I think it was very well organized, so I slotted it in as an example.
Great, a best practice.
So any comments on that first section? I think that what I was struggling with personally myself was, you know, where do you actually recommend something, or where do you make something mandatory in a working group, and where do you leave something to the discretion of a chair? You know?
Yeah, I think that's exactly the tough question. This is Ken. That's a very difficult question, and I would suggest that in most situations, if we went as far as just listing all of the things that might be considered, even saying, you know, what we would recommend that you establish some kind of minimum criteria around participation. For example, you know, without having to say it must be 80% of attendance or you get kicked out in the third meeting or the second, you know, I think as long as we create the kind of some flexibility there, that they can easily, and if there's good practices already out there, we can cite them, and I like what you've done here.
I think certainly, you know, I mean, I like that example, must attend at least. I mean, definitions like that will have to be discussed at the next level when we get to the full team and so on and so forth. But the fact that it's just an example so that people are beginning to think in terms of numbers at least, you know, I mean, that's fine, I mean, you know, I think. And in fact, a possibility would be down the line, instead of insisting just 80%, one could say it is expected that you attend 80%, but if you fall below 25%, you know, then, you know, you could be blah, 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 right? I mean, you know, so set the threshold really low, but expectation high. You know, that may be a way we might want to deal with it later. But again, that's all numbers that we don't need to really look into at this point, right?
Yeah.
Anybody, any other thoughts on 3.1 from anybody else before we move to 3.2?
Yeah, this is Ken. The other one that might be a little tougher to deal with is contribution. You know, are there any guidelines around what a reasonable, minimal contribution level is? I've been in groups myself, you know, where there's always the question of airtime. You know, are certain people monopolizing and are others able to get in edgewise? And maybe there's some things we could say around that. If for no other purpose than to just make chairs aware that that could become an issue and it might be under the surface and something that could be discussed.
Yeah, and then conversely, you can have people who are just so-called lurkers in a working group and, you know, aren't there to contribute or participate in any shape or form, and, you know, that's the opposite of the problem you identified, Ken.
Mm-hmm, yes.
I guess fair enough. I mean,
things that sort of... Sorry, Zubia, but I think that sort of 3.2 sort of addresses this issue, sort of.
Yeah, I guess in the sense that if you define a group as down to one person, then it certainly does, right? Actually, it says individual, yes, right, it does, sort of. But perhaps you might want to just put a statement, somebody, either Caroline or somebody, add there to say, look, it's actually something to the extent that chairs be aware that to look out for things like this, flag, you know, someone taking too much time or someone lurking, you know, just say to look out rather than to give any recommendation of what to do about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, moving on, section 3.2, which reading again, I don't know if it would sit more comfortably in the charter, but in any case, Constantino suggested that we add in wording around having principles of justice and fairness and ensuring that no person or, I guess, subgroup would be allowed to dominate any decision-making process or discussions. And we mentioned the concept of, you know, alliances being able to form within the work group, but that it would be at the discretion of the chair to put a close to that if those alliances were in any way proving unproductive. Any thoughts on that section?
Anyone?
Well, I guess so. This is Tim.
Go ahead, Tim.
I guess it'll just depend on the on how we flush it out. I guess I think the fact that alliances, I think there'll be participants coming into the working group with alliances already formed, but no doubt. So I think that's going to have to be expected to some extent. So I guess I'd just be kind of interested in how a chair might have discretion to limit that. You know, what the examples would be where we would limit that or allow them to limit that.
Sorry, Ken. It's Konstantinos. My thinking was not so much the alliances that are already formed. Yes, that should be expected. But these alliances, if, for example, any individual or any subgroup wants to join them, they should not be exclusive, and by no means should they determine the course of the discussions or the decision-making processes. And because we're talking about norms and everything, and I'm speaking here as a lawyer, everything established as norms has a certain amount of validity. I think that we need to ensure that at a minimum level, at least, there is some sort of mechanism to provide a balance between the participation of all the parties.
Okay, I think I may have a good example for what Constantine is saying. If a group has formed and has an alliance within it, and it becomes obvious it is one to the chair, and if it turns out there's a sub-team being formed on a general issue, now if it turns out that all the people from that alliance are identically mapped in the sub-team, there's nobody else extra in there, you know, people from the sub-team are the only ones handling that particular general issue, I mean, you know, from this alliance, then that would be a lack of balance on that issue, right? I mean, so perhaps the chair might then say, look, in that sub-team, we need to have somebody else who's not part of this alliance in there. Does that make sense, Constantine? Something
yes.
Like? Yeah, okay.
Perhaps, Tim, I think, too, that part of, I could see some other issues, too, I guess, now that after listening to that example. But I think that's why, ultimately, you know, it's important that, you know, the statement of interests are collected so that at whatever level that the work product is reviewed, you know, consensus or different viewpoints or minority reports or whatever can all be viewed with an understanding of who the participants were and what interests they might have represented, et cetera.
Yeah, I think. And one of the things that could be also fed back into this point is that in case alliances are upset that this is happening to them because the chair, you know, has discretion and is instituting some changes, they still have to, you know, they can still go back and appeal to the general appeal process if anything untoward is right. I mean, some general appeal process that was going to make for all these different things up the chain.
Yeah. Right, and I think the chair should obviously have the ability to you know, take initiative to council as well if necessary for advice or help. Whatever.
And so a language should be introduced perhaps there to just tell the chair or the committee that, hey, you know, if these things kind of happen, there's stuff you can do both ways. The chair and so on can try to limit it. Meanwhile, the people who are being limited have the shot at going, you know, appealing. But the fact that there's some languages say that this is all possible is pretty useful.
This is Ken. You know, my suggestion is, and I've captured some of the thoughts that have just been expressed, some of this, I think, might be better placed in Section 2.4 sub-teams, so that in addition to whether the working group considers the use of sub-teams, a second consideration is how they're formed, who gets on them, ensuring a reasonable balance among interests on sub-teams. Those are the kinds of things that I'm hearing being discussed, and I'm wondering if they might be better expressed under sub-teams than they would here under norms and behaviors.
Yeah, I think it could fit there equally.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you know, you might want to just split the, you know, I mean, address both of it a little bit.
Some of what we had in mind in this section 3.2, and an idea that I have is ICANN has a code of conduct, and it talks about things like you know, respectful listening and so forth and so on. Maybe it's just a good idea to replicate that code of conduct right in Section 3.2 somewhere, and then over time, as working groups evolve and behaviors manifest themselves, people can say, oh, be careful of this, watch out for that. You know, and in terms of norms, you know, I was even thinking about things like, should a work group think about things like, hey, if you want to speak, you know, here's how you do it, or don't talk over each other. You know, do you raise your hand? If you're in Adobe Connect, there's little mechanisms. And that might be going into a little bit more detail than we want to go at this point, but all those are norms as well.
Seems okay to me, since we do have to, being part of ICANN, we still have to follow the ICANN general rules, right? So,
would anyone object if I tossed the ICANN code of conduct into this section?
I mean, I think we have, I mean, the point is that if we did have our own stuff here, and it turns out along the way, somewhere along the line, someone doesn't like what's in there but likes what's in the ICANN code of conduct, they can still appeal up way above us at the board level, correct? I mean, because it's an ICANN code of conduct. So I think it supplants what we have anyway. So I think de facto terms, it's included, right? I mean, but we, so therefore, adding it is not going to make any difference. I mean, I think we should. That's what I'm trying to say. It's already cut.
Tennis list.
Mm-hmm.
What you might do is just post it for review by the group. And
sure, yeah, that's a good idea.
That's what I meant.
And see if it looks consistent with, you know, working group as opposed to, you know, an employee organization. If any tweaks are appropriate, it might be helpful as a, you know, useful tool to extrapolate from, but I don't think we should feel at all required to adhere to it exactly.
Okay, I understand.
Just it exists,
and perhaps our lawyer Constantine can take a look at it too, right?
Yes, yes, I agree with that.
Okay, all right. Now my problem is this: it's 6 minutes to the end of the hour. Okay, I can say that although we're only about halfway through, we're making great progress compared to the other sub-teams. So and I think it's all very good. And it's all, you know, part of the stuff we'll have to discuss later on anyway when we draft all these things. Now, I'm kind of responsible at this point because Tim's not on yet, I think. He's supposed to join us, but I don't think he's here yet. I don't get him. So it leaves only Ken and I have discussed a little bit about what on the logistics and requirements, which I kind of hot wrote and then Ken and Tim modified. So, you know, I know that we're about to go into 3.4, which is meaning of consensus. That's going to take some time, possibly, right? So I have to leave in several minutes. And so I was thinking, since I would be required, and I assume, unless Ken wants to handle the logistics and requirements part, that I could take kind of like shell 3.4, meaning of consensus, and 3.5 form requirements.
3.3 as well, we need to do.
Oh, and 3.3 as well. And then let you guys come back, circle around, and discuss that, and then Tim can discuss the stuff at the end, you know, assuming we have time. And then I'm going to, you know, and I guess if it turns out that even after I've gone, there's still actually this thing drags and it takes a lot longer, then I'll leave it up to the group and the new chair, where the same thing from me, to decide whether, look, we can't actually finish going through all of it today, and we just have to say, okay, we'll have to tell the full team that, well, this is as far as how we got. Okay, that's my take on it. So is that okay if I could just jump in and start on the on section 4, which is a lot easier to go through? I think it's pretty much just three.
You now have 5 minutes.
Okay. All right. Is that okay?
It's okay with me.
Okay. All right. Okay, thank you. I'm just going to go ahead with 4.0 logistics and requirements. This is meant just as a big checklist of things, of mundane, nitty-gritty things that, you know, just like I was appointed chair or something last week. I had to figure out, okay, what's required of me to do, you know. And I knew I had to put an agenda, I had to do this, I had to do that. Well, ICANN is trying the working group model for the first time, in a sense. So, yeah, we any chair that will be chairing a working group will be somebody kind of actually probably not having done a working group model before. So from that point of view, there may be a lot of things that they just need to be told immediately. Do you remember the phone? Do you remember this software? That kind of stuff. So that's the view that was taken in detailing a lot of the stuff. It was just throwing it there so that people could remember to make a choice about these things. You know, so general meeting logistics, the work environment and workload. You know, there should be the stuff that should be put up should be standardized and available before the session itself, right? And anything for a meeting, okay, should be available earlier. That's the point that it's trying to make. And then it talks about different meeting options as person, teleconference. What are you going to actually do? These are nitty-gritty things that have to be decided by the group itself. You're going to do video support, Adobe Connect, Skype. These are things that people have to define early on within the group itself in the chair so that teams can move faster and be more productive, you know, and make sure everybody's on board. Thomas's view was that we were going a bit into too detailed because he felt his view was that this was less of a guidebook and more of a formal procedure kind of thing. So his view was that this should be simply left to the staff and let them decide and so on. So I think that was his thinking coming in. So my view is that if it is a guidebook, then perhaps it's okay to just remind all these different, the kind of nitty-gritty decisions that have to be taken by the chair and the committee. And if this is not the place to put it into 4.1, then perhaps, as Ken talked about, put it into the, it has to be in somewhere as a checklist according to the chair and the committee, how they want to go about it, they just select. Maybe the place to put it is into this appendix that Ken's talking about.
Let me just jump in. I think Thomas's point really once he understood what we were doing with the guidebook,
yes,
I think he was okay,
yes,
with that.
Okay,
where his objection was,
yes,
and having worked on many working groups, is that working groups can oftentimes get bogged down into details they get themselves tangled up in knots. And they have these discussions about, well, should we do Skype or Jabber, and everybody's got their favorite tool. And I think his point of view here, which is why I added it, is that, you know, even in a guidebook, we want to be careful not to suggest to working groups that they take on things that will that others might do for them. And I think in his position is staff ought to make these determinations. They ought to pick best of breed tools, set them up for the working group, and not leave it to the working groups to decide on their own. Now, I don't know whether everybody agrees with that, but that's the point that was trying to be captured here.
Okay, perhaps then I'm okay with that as well. So, I mean, but perhaps the point would be to say the staff working with the chair would figure out what would be the appropriate thing for that committee, and that the committee should be given, I mean, they don't have to be in the decision-making process, but they ought to be able to at least make some comments about it. You know, if something is just totally inappropriate, they should be able to say, look, as a group, it doesn't work for us or something. Is that fair enough?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other thoughts on the matter? I mean, a lot of this stuff going forward is going to be stuff like that, basically. Anybody else wants to make a comment at this point? Okay, and then the issues of, the next one is regarding times. What are the selection of times, length and duration of the meetings, establish expectations, frequency, what kind of frequency, upfront, saying what are the duration and schedule, is it 6 months, 12 months, okay? I mean, it may be in the charter, as Ken points out, but the point is, somewhere we may have to address these things so that people are upfront all these nitty-gritty things so that hopefully before even applying a committee or something, they know, hey, you know, this is what might be expected of them, at least roughly. You know, when are the, you know, how many times a week, you know, when are the physical meetings, you know, rough ideas. Or in July there might be a physical meeting or whatever, just beforehand. It may change along the way, but people have a real expected understanding of what they want to get into. Okay? And then the issue regarding agenda is, you know, we got to decide on whether it's one day or 2 days in advance or whatever. But something, some draft language is to be created as advice, potential advice to the chair and the committee about what are norms that might be thought of in terms of agenda. And Thomas pointed out that minutes are very important and they need to be archived. He stressed very much that, and that, you know, and they should happen within a certain amount of time, and action items should be highlighted, you know, at minutes and so on. And I think those are all there, and I think unless people have objections or at least thoughts on that, seems all reasonable. And I, again, coming back to the draft schedule, as Ken points out, it might have its own subsection, perhaps for that and a couple of other issues, meaning the idea of pre-figured out draft schedule before even the whole show starts. Any thoughts on 12.1 in general, the items in there? Anyone? Okay. I'll go to 4.2, a bit easier. Communication. We're talking about mailing lists. Just, you know, nitty-gritty about mailing lists regarding, you know, silly things like the chair may need to think in terms of please don't add attachments more than 10 megabytes. You know, whatever the number, but something for the chair to think about or the committee to think about. To make sure upfront, maybe the staff is the one that will put the input for this, as Thomas suggests. But somehow, you know, all these nitty-gritty things are taken care of early on. And I guess Ken is suggesting that the abusive behavior stuff should be put into as part of the other section, and that's perfectly fine, too. And then, of course, decision-making on collaboration tools. What are you going to use? Is it Adobe or Word or, you know, dumb things that, you know, screw us up along the way. I couldn't open the file and this and that. If it was all pre-sorted out by somebody, whether it's staff or chair working together or with some committee input, that'll all be very helpful. And also data formats, right? Which formats there, okay? And I guess also in that context, document versioning, because, you know, right now, for example, I mean, although we're trying to use the wiki and everything, a lot of us are still depending on all these emails that go through us, and we have lots of these emails floating around, so, you know, to find a document, you still have to go back and find them, and so, you know, perhaps there's some methodology perhaps what we're doing now with the wiki could be the way that is suggested for the next chair or whatever, for the next general thing, and that's there as well. Any thoughts on that? On 4.2?
There is a working group on communications, I believe. I wonder, is there a cross-section with what they're doing? I don't know whether they're more focused on external communications and this is more, you know, internal working group communications.
Ken?
Yes, that group is, the communications is more externally focused and intergroup rather than intra-group.
Okay.
I have a thought, actually, Ken, based on what Thomas is saying. Maybe, I know it's kind of asking ICANN staff to do work, but on the other hand, it might turn out a lot easier for ICANN staff down the road, which is to say, look, a lot of this kind of detailed nitty-gritty stuff, which software and all that stuff, ICANN developed essentially a package, essentially, what you like to do, the staff. Let's pick JPEG, let's pick this, let's pick that, and have it as a sort of a collective package offering to the chair of the working model. You know, and then they can decide whether they want to deviate from that, but it exists. Does that make sense, Ken?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that will be a way of collapsing this, all these ideas, you know, into that, basically saying. And then the committees are free to deviate from that if they want, but there's something off the bat, there's something already available as a system. All right. Then 4.3, training subject matter expertise and translation interpretation. I think basically what is meant here is all three are viewed as just experts. I mean, it just repeats, actually, that point. Whether you need somebody to come in and train you, or whether you need a subject matter expert because it's some really deeply technical stuff and we all need to understand about it, or we need to get a translator or interpreter because that's needed. I think the issue that we try to address here is that there's upfront, within the first two sort of maybe convened meetings, working group committee meetings, people need to identify, either before or within the first two meetings, the committee, the chair, the whole, have to identify what is really needed. Maybe the charter also identifies some people already. That may not be the case. But the fact is that that these people should be identified or the need should be identified and a cost figured out and, you know, kind of pre-approved, submitted, you know, so that we have that early going in. And also, if there's to be any, to take off on a point that Tim brought up, if there's to be any training or subject matter expertise to come in, it should happen earlier, that means in the first month or whatever, so it's done with rather than, you know, and then we can begin with the work. And that's what this section tried to capture. And additionally, since this is undoubtedly usually going to cost extra money, then the people putting together the chair of the committee, coming up with the notion of, yes, we need this, not only should they figure out what the cost is for ICANN staff so they have a good idea, but also have a good idea of a tracking mechanism put in place. That is, what are the objectives? Are, you know, if there's going to be training or there's expertise, are people attending it? Are they actually taking, making, you know, there's an expertise con call but nobody turns up? You know, I mean, you're paying for this. So, and additionally, make sure that there's a success is measured, you know, at the end of it. So on top of all of that, the chair should find out, at least to think about finding out what the overall budget would be under this working group model. If, say, down the road they decide they need another expert or something, you know, would there be money for that already? I mean, you know, there's an overall budget as opposed to what's been approved. That's the overall possible budget. That may be useful for the chair to know before going in. So these are the kind of things that I try to capture. But Thomas's point is that if the group itself is allowed to figure out who the experts are or who the training part is, then the group could just spend all its time, being perverse and stonewalling. Just saying, look, we need another expert, and nothing ever gets done because it just goes forward. And one way of trying to address that was to say, look, all this has to be done pretty much up front, and there's a timeline for it and a schedule. That means that training experts must all be gotten either soon after the charter or before the chair, before the meeting convenes, or at least within the first two meetings of the committee itself. And that's the main area in which all of this should get done and decided. Yes, there may be an opportunity to go look for an expert much later, but it should not be a very easy process to do so. That is, that most of it is meant to be done within the first time frame. Anyway, that was kind of the general thought. Any thoughts on this? Anybody?
Nope. I think we can move on.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I think we can move on.
Okay, move on. Sure. Okay. There's one other point I want to say that I forgot. Thomas brought up a point that if people keep asking for training, then somebody's got to be able to, if the WG can keep, you know, working group can ask for it, then he can say no to it. Someone can say no to that request. Okay? So who's going to say no to that request? I mean, that's a good question. I suspect there'll be two answers to that. One is the budget will say no from the top. The other no is perhaps the chair, you know, in conjunction with the committee itself, and that's the kind of a chair discretion. You know, I don't know. That's a thought. Those are the only two things I can think of to address that issue. Okay. Besides that, I'll just move on, and I'll just go to 4.4, which is staff support. And what I tried to capture here, which generally seems to be okay with Ken and Thomas, is that we need to, this is kind of critical because, again, it involves money. So, and up front, early on in the game, with the chair really coming up with a draft and then perhaps working with the committee itself to finalize it, is that one needs to estimate staff time in terms of what is the number of staff time you need at the beginning, startup process, before even the meetings convene. Then at the end, because even after the meetings stop, there's a reporting process, there's a lot of other staff work, the report to the other boards, and so on and so forth. So that's the one-off things at both ends. And then on a routine basis, weekly meetings, every monthly meeting, you know, and setting up for a physical ICANN meeting, those routine things in between. And there are two types of, first you need to figure out what the total staff mandates are required, at least some number working with ICANN staff. And the other thing is also then have to divide that into all the different skill sets that are required. If we need somebody to help us with setting up phone calls, or we need somebody to help us setting up with a physical meeting, that's with different skill sets, you know, in terms of who can do translation, who can do consulting writing, you know, or writing a report. So not only figuring out how much total staff units and time and cost it will be, but also what are the different types of skill sets we need, how much of each. You know, at least a rough pass at it so that people have a very good idea as a, before too much, things don't get too far ahead in terms of operations. Okay, and so there's some thoughts about that in terms of how to do that and what kind of skill sets to look for. We've tried to put in as many skill sets as we can think of in there for the chair to think of: software use, writing report production, meeting logistics support, coordination, secretariat. If anyone can think of any other skill sets that should be in there, maybe mediation, I don't know, okay, but Ken's doing a good job, so, you know, somebody, you know, you might want to include any other skill sets for, you know, to put on a cheat sheet for the new chair. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is Tim. I guess I don't see that this would start at the working group level, and maybe that wasn't the intent, but it seems to me that some of this would need to be initially done up front by the council. The council is actually charged with, you know, the management of the process. And so I think even before, you know, a working group is formed, that the council should have some understanding of what kind of costs are going to be involved in performing the work, et cetera. So I see this more as a refinement of that once the working group gets formed and actually realizes, you know, what might be involved, who's participating, et cetera.
Right, I agree. The charter would probably predefine a lot of things. They might have even have a chair in mind in the background, but they would not have chosen one yet. And then when the chair gets given the job, the chair, it will be in the chair's best interest, and later the committee, to actually review the same thing again, at least in more detailed terms with the cheat sheet, so that they're pretty aware, you know, going in, what are the limitations, right? And what are the things that you might have to go back and ask for if you needed it really badly.
Ken, I definitely echo Tim's comment there. The charter is likely not to be silent on budget, and where the charter sponsors have thought through the composition of the team in terms of what skill sets and what expertise is needed, what staff support is needed, that will all be prescribed in the charter. And I guess in the operating model, we just need to leave some room in there so that if the charter is silent in a specific area, or if the working group says, you know, they've assigned me two staff people, but there's a specific set of skills we think we need that weren't included, that there's some there's some methodology and they know how to proceed at that point in terms of getting the extra help they need and that kind of thing. That was really the general idea.
Ken, I'd be more than happy if you could just take everything in 4.4 and then put a sentence on top of it to say that was the intent of what's below.
Sure.
Okay. And so I'm kind of done, and I'm about 15 minutes late to my other thing. And I am done with my what I'm personally, which Ken and Tom responsible for. So if there are no other thoughts on 4.4, then I think I'll leave it to you guys to get back to, if you wanted to continue with this, given the time frame we're at, to go back and look at 3.3, rules of engagement, meetings of consensus, and quorum requirements. My own thoughts there, it's up to you guys how you want to do this, but those are going to be a little bit more discussion, I would expect. And then what's left is the products and output section, which I think would be probably a lot quicker. I don't know, and that's up to Tim, I guess. And this has to be discussed. And if we feel that, if you guys feel that this the con call has gone on too long already, and that we'll just have to, you know, we'll do this by email afterwards, and then maybe, you know, perhaps even tell the full team next time when we meet, look, we didn't get to this a proper discussion of five yet. We may have to discuss it again all together as a full team. That's also okay with me. But the key thing is that whatever we've done or whatever we've not finished today, we should just go back, and as Ken wraps it up and modifies it based on today's thoughts, if anybody else had any other input, even on the parts that we've discussed, please, you know, go back and feel free to edit this. And then be prepared on, I don't know how the agenda for the next full team meeting is going to be, but every section report leader should be prepared to perhaps revisit this and present this in some other form at the full team meeting. It may happen, I don't know. Ken, any thoughts?
Not at the moment on that.
Okay. I am more than happy. If anybody wants to be chair, I can just, you know, suggest someone else, or if Ken wants to do it, or Well, you know, it's okay with me. So
I don't mind just walking us through the remaining items. So I'll pick up from where you left off there. So
okay, and I think in the interest of making sure that, you know, we're as things stand, we're 15 minutes past the hour that normally is for this. So you may want to check with others if, you know, but they're being on going forward in terms of time. Okay, thank you. Bye bye, guys.
Okay, bye bye.
Bye bye.
On that point, does anybody have a hard stop, or can we continue?
It's going to be done a little bit before noon because of the there's another call for the registrar's qualification procedure. I don't want to miss.
Yes, I have another meeting as well, so we'll have to leave in 10 minutes.
Yeah, I have to leave as well. Like, I'm already outside.
Okay. All right. Do we want to let, maybe we can ask Caroline to just quickly go through 3334, 3335, finish that, and then we'll handle 5.0 on the list.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
And what I'll do, Ken, on 5 is I'll start it with just a brief explanation of what I came up with and why.
Yeah, that's great. I took all your bullets and just threw them in there, but yeah, that'd be great, Tim.
All right.
Okay, good.
Okay.
You're on.
Thanks, so I can rattle through this. 3.3, rules of engagement. The idea we had here was basically there would be two different ways of assessing support or otherwise or objections for a proposal or an idea. That would be either through a formal vote process, and I guess there's probably a cross-section with 3.4, consensus, or through an informal process whereby the chair is simply, I guess, taking a temperature really for a proposal or an idea, but not actually calling for a formal vote. And I guess probably in terms of the formal vote process, we recommend good record keeping, record should be presented in working group reports. That's 3.3. I'll move on, shall I? 3.4, meeting of consensus. Consensus may be called by the chair at any time, and the participants' position should be noticed in any working group report. I noted here that we had some preliminary discussion within the wider group on consensus and different thresholds, so I tried to set out the high-level thresholds that we spoke about. I don't think we ever actually signed off on that, and we probably need to address it again within the wider group.
Let me pipe in on that one for a second. As Tim Ruiz and Avery and maybe even a few others have pointed out, it may turn out that we will want to have the meaning, the definition of consensus tied down in the charter in more instances than not. I mean, it doesn't necessarily require a sponsor to define consensus, but in many cases where public or ICANN policy is going to be binding on organizations and groups, that they'll want the meaning of consensus specifically defined. And all we may have to write here is, in the absence of a specific definition of consensus in your charter, working group, you know, you should then discuss, and here are some options to consider, here's different ways you could do it, and so, you know, that might be the way to handle it here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 3.5 then, quorum requirements. We suggest that a simple majority constitutes a quorum, and where there's no quorum, any vote is invalid. Although the chair has the discretion to issue a re-invitation to vote, and the chair may also instigate a voting process by email during a defined period if he or she has not been able to decide on a vote within a particular meeting. That was 3.5. A complete section.
Okay.
Any other comments on that?
Good. Thank you, Caroline.
Thank you.
Anything else for the good of the lodge? If not, I will try to summarize our discussion today, and we'll just keep working on the wiki, I would guess, between now and 6 May, which is our next big team meeting, and then hopefully the team leads for each section will be in a position to sort of summarize where we are at that point. Rec recognizing that if we only have an hour for the great big team, then we've got both the charter and the operating model, it's not likely that we're going to be able to go through each and every sub-bullet like we tried to do today. So just logistically, it's not going to be possible. So we'll have to think a little bit about, with Jay Scott, how to handle that meeting. Great. Well, thank you all for your participation and for getting your stuff in on time, and we'll keep working on the wiki and through the email list. And if anybody has trouble with posting to the wiki, you know, don't be shy about sending an email, and I'll go ahead and take care of it for you.
Okay.
Okay. So the next, sorry, the next meeting is?
This group is done. This sub-team is disbanded unless the big team says it should continue. I mean, there is a drafting set of tasks that occur after the May 6th meeting, but I don't know whether we're going to keep the same groups or whether we're going to have different ones. So maybe, but this group doesn't have another meeting set up, I don't think, right?
Okay, so we've got another meeting on May 6th for the work group.
The entire working group team, yeah.
Okay, and that's at the same time as this?
Didn't check.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye.
Everybody.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
We can stop the recording now.